Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. It's a medical condition that strikes women 7 times more often than men, particularly middle-aged women. For years, it was widely debated in the medical community, with many skeptics doubting its existence. But fibromyalgia is now widely recognized, though its causes are still unknown.
Fibromyalgia affects an estimated 5 million adults in the United States. Here to discuss the symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment of fibromyalgia is Dr. Robert Schmerling, a Harvard Medical School professor who is also clinical chief of rheumatology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Schmerling. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What is fibromyalgia, and how has our thinking changed about this syndrome over the last few years?
Well, fibromyalgia is a condition of unknown cause, a rather mysterious condition that causes chronic pain, longstanding pain, that's body-wide. It's diffuse and tends to affect the upper and lower half of the body, right and left sides of the body, especially in the joints and muscles. And as you mentioned, quite common and quite poorly understood.
I know it overlaps with a lot of other conditions and diseases, autoimmune diseases. So when you're making that diagnosis, what do you have to take into account to differentiate fibromyalgia from, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, it's a great question because fibromyalgia can mimic many other conditions. And in fact, many patients who develop this problem, the problem with fibromyalgia, they think they have arthritis. They're worried they have rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. And it takes some patience and time to sort out based on the symptoms, based on the physical examination, and often some blood tests and possibly x-rays and other tests to sort out whether or not it's fibromyalgia or something else. In fact, we often call fibromyalgia a diagnosis of exclusion because you have to exclude other things that can look a lot like it.
When you're talking about a blood test, when I was doing some research for this segment, I was wondering if there is one definitive blood test. I think it would be a relief to the patients, but is there just one, or it's just part of the pieces of the puzzle when you're putting it together?
Really, there is no one blood test for fibromyalgia. It would be great if there were either one or more specific ways or diagnostic ways to identify the condition. But unfortunately, it's not. So it remains a diagnosis of exclusion. People who have symptoms that are compatible and who don't seem to have any other explanation for the symptoms are diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
So we're talking about widespread pain and something of unknown origin. Does this explain why, for so many years, people doubted the existence of fibromyalgia and might have considered it was a psychosomatic condition?
I think that's right. I think when there's two problems with fibromyalgia and it's gaining legitimacy. One is that its cause is unknown, as you mentioned, but also that you can't see anything. You can't measure anything, at least until fairly recently that's been the case. So there isn't a single blood test that's abnormal. Measures of inflammation are normal. Blood counts and routine tests of body function or organ function are all normal. So with everything normal and nothing that one can see on an examination, everything is subjective with respect to pain. It calls into question whether in the mind of the observer, of the person examining the patient with fibromyalgia, whether it's, quote, real or not. And so that's quite right. For the longest time, it had been considered a psychological manifestation of distress or depression or anxiety.
Can you identify a turning point in which this stopped being the prevailing approach to fibromyalgia?
I think it's been gradual in the last decade or two. You had asked about how thinking has changed. It was originally thought to be a muscle disease because of the prominent muscle pain. But with a lot of testing, a lot of evaluation, it turns out the muscles seem to be normal, or at least when they're abnormal, it seems to be an effect of the condition, not a cause of it. I think in the last couple of decades, tests of brain function, of spinal fluid, of nerve function, psychological assessments has led to a change that's been gradual in the understanding that it's probably a condition of abnormal pain processing, of abnormal sensitivity to pain, rather than a psychosomatic condition.
Who is at highest risk of getting fibromyalgia, and does stress play a role?
Well, the highest incidence of the condition is in women, far more than men, and onset is typically middle-aged or early adulthood, so say age 20 to 50 would be the peak incidence. So they're at risk. It affects 1 or 2% of the population, so that's a lot of people. People at risk are also those who have family members with fibromyalgia. It turns out that it can run in families, or at least the risk is higher. It's not 100% by any means, suggesting a possible genetic component even to the development of the condition. So those are the individuals at risk, but that's unfortunately a very large population and hard to center it more specifically to individuals.
So if someone in the listening audience hearing about fibromyalgia has some of these symptoms, do they go to their primary physician? And then which kind of doctor specializes in treating fibromyalgia? What's the process like from the patient's point of view in getting the diagnosis? And then we'll talk about treatment.
Sure. So I would advocate evaluation with a primary care physician as a first step. Some more obvious causes of diffuse pain could be evaluated at an initial visit with a primary care physician. If there's obvious joint swelling, it's not fibromyalgia. It's likely something else, maybe something in the family of rheumatoid arthritis. So that's something based on the review of symptoms and a physical examination that a primary care physician can readily assess. So that would be the first step, and also looking for the mimics, conditions like thyroid disease or even depression as a primary problem. Those things can be readily screened for in a visit with a primary care doctor. Rheumatologists tend to be the specialists most commonly consulted with respect to fibromyalgia, although it is a condition often taken care of by multiple physicians, pain specialists, psychologists, rheumatologists, physical therapists, which gets into the treatment options as well. But it tends to be multidisciplinary, coordinated by the primary care physician, but involving other caregivers.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking to Dr. Robert Schmerling. He's a rheumatologist. We're talking about fibromyalgia. So as you were just describing, it's a multidisciplinary approach, and so different doctors are addressing different symptoms of the patient. I don't want to get too specific because I'm sure it varies, but in general, what is the approach to symptom management? Is it behavior modification, or are we just talking medicine?
It is individualized, so each patient is treated in a particular way based on their preferences, based on their symptoms, based on other conditions they may have or other medications they may take. But I would emphasize one of the very first approaches to therapy in fibromyalgia is physical activity. So exercise, low-impact aerobic exercises like biking or walking briskly, water aerobics tend to be very well tolerated, even in people who have pain in the joints or muscles. So those are good choices. And many physicians treating fibromyalgia will urge their patients to take on exercise as the initial treatment before considering any medication at all. And then there are a number of medications, pain medications like Tylenol or acetaminophen, but also amitriptyline, duloxetine, muscle relaxants, pregabalin. These are all medications that are commonly used for fibromyalgia. And can be somewhat effective, although I would say that often physical exercise or physical activity can be more effective than medications, or certainly medications alone aren't terribly effective in most patients.
In many situations when someone is dealing with chronic pain, there is the use of relaxation techniques or acupuncture. What about the efficacy of these for fibromyalgia?
Well, there are studies of Tai Chi and massage and yoga, I think less is known about a lot of the other alternative therapies, but certainly individual patients I've seen and have heard about have reported improvement with these approaches. So I think anything that is safe and a reasonable consideration by the patient, I would encourage, because we don't have ideal therapies for this, and patients often find their own way to feel better. And if that includes acupuncture or one of the other alternative approaches, I certainly condone that. And I would mention also psychological counseling can be helpful for those who have a significant amount of either anxiety, depression, or other emotional or mood problems.
I imagine that it's a tremendous relief to at least have the medical profession acknowledge that this is a real syndrome. I mean, that being feeling in pain and isolated and not acknowledged, you know, is a hard combination. So in your practice and in your experience, as we wrap up talking to you, how successful have you been in alleviating some of the pain and concerns of your patients that suffer from fibromyalgia?
I think I'm moderately successful in reducing symptoms at least somewhat. I can't say I've seen many cures for fibromyalgia, and the improvement that happens is often modest. But one thing I tell my patients is that when they get better, or when my patients who preceded them get better, it's often because of something they've found that works for them and something they've had the motivation to pursue, often exercise, as I mentioned, rather than something I came up with as a prescription or as a specific recommendation for fibromyalgia. So I would say modestly successful, but it is a frustrating condition. I think there is a measure of relief at finding physicians or other caregivers who take the condition seriously. There's still plenty of physicians who consider it a psychosomatic illness and are not enthusiastic about taking care of patients with fibromyalgia. So I think support and education and reassurance is quite helpful.
Dr. Robert Schmerling is a Harvard Medical School professor who is also clinical chief of rheumatology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Dr. Schmerling, thank you so much for joining us here at Take Care.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
For more on fibromyalgia and Dr. Schmerling, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org.
On next week's show, why do we worry about some things and ignore others? The author of How Risky Is It Really? Explains why our fears don't always match the facts.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.